Some Philadelphia airport workers join a national movement calling for more pay. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Last night, contracted workers at Philadelphia International Airport walked off the job for another single-day strike. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports they're demanding better wages and more respect.
The workers picketed between terminals B and C at the airport, wearing Service Employees International Union t-shirts and chanting familiar union slogans. These are the people that handle bags at curbside, clean aircraft, and handle wheelchair assistance, among other things. Baggage handler Christopher Vega is making the $12 an hour as mandated by the mayor, city council, and a new contract at the airport. He says the problem is management doesn't show respect.
We will come in and we're supposed to wear black shoes. That's fine. It'll have like white or something in it. We gotta go home. It's just the way they come off. It's just the attitudes.
Icilius Jones says pushing wheelchairs is a difficult job. He says he deserves to be paid more than $11 an hour plus tips.
It's rough. We have passengers that can't really walk, so sometimes we have to lift them. It could be 300 to 400 or 600 pounds.
The employees are now pressing for $15 an hour. City Councilman Curtis Jones says a fair wage means workers will not possibly be tempted by terrorists.
A living wage not only is good for the economy, but it's good for security. We're talking about sensitive areas here at the airport. That has value.
The strike is not preventing flights from leaving on time. The airport contractors who employ these workers did not reply to requests for comment about the strike. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Philadelphia's 99th mayor, Jim Kenney, will be inaugurated into office Monday, January 4th. And in advance of that transition, NewsWorks Tonight is looking at the legacy of outgoing mayor Michael Nutter. In this evening's second installment of a six-part series, let's look at efforts to cut down on crime. And for that, let's first check in with Dr. Jerry Radcliffe, professor and chair of the Department of Criminal Justice at Temple University. Dr. Radcliffe, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Nice to be here.
And let's note that you've done some work with Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey. As mayor-elect, Nutter pulled him out of retirement and brought him to the police force here. Good move?
Absolutely. We were at a time in the city when crime was on the increase that was definitely a bit of a crisis. And the mayor's team sought far and wide to bring probably the most experienced police commissioner available and in the country at the time to Philadelphia.
Now, it's true that crime has decreased in many major metropolitan areas, any more so as a ratio in Philadelphia?
Philadelphia's done pretty well compared to the large cities in the rest of the country over the last 7 or 8 years. There are some increases in homicides this year across the United States, but it's too early to tell whether that is just a short-term spike and we can continue a downward trend, or if we've hit the bottom and we might be thinking about crime going up again in the future.
I understand you specifically consulted with Ramsey and the Philadelphia Police Department regarding foot patrols. Explain.
Well, Philadelphia has led the country in understanding how foot patrol can actually help reduce violent crime in neighborhoods and in small community pockets in Philadelphia. We've also tried other tactics as well. The Philadelphia Police Department under the mayor and under the police commissioner have done experiments and looking at the value of focusing on serious violent offenders in the city, and that's helped reduce violent crime as well.
That focus is also being done with increasing camera work, surveillance cameras in the city.
Yeah, surveillance cameras haven't really provided the return on the benefit that we would hope. They've certainly helped, but there are possibly other ways, especially in terms of investing in more police officers to actually have boots on the ground, that might be more beneficial ways to spend our city funds.
If you were to have the opportunity to advise Deputy Commissioner and soon-to-be Commissioner Richard Ross, which aspects of the Ramsey legacy would you ask him to maintain and expand, and which might he then consider cutting?
I think the current administration have done a good job in terms of improving accountability and improving the use of data and analysis to have a more scientific approach to reducing crime. I think one of the strengths the mayor brought is to bring an experienced police commissioner and then know enough to get out of his way so the police commissioner could do his job. It's also been beneficial to have a mayor who is prepared to allow the police commissioner to take risks. For example, by allowing the police commissioner to bring the Department of Justice in, before it became a huge problem to deal with the use of force issues in the Philadelphia Police Department. That's some political risk involved in that, and he's to be lauded for that.
And let's talk more generally about Ramsey going after corrupt cops. What's been the result?
I would say the result is probably mixed. Unfortunately, the mayor, for all his strengths in supporting Commissioner Ramsey, has maintained a long Philadelphia tradition of not really taking on the police union. So that's caused problems in terms of moving the police department to a better place.
Doctor, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
My pleasure.
Dr. Jerry Radcliffe is professor and chair of the Department of Criminal Justice at Temple University, where he also directs the Center for Security and Crime Science. Let's get another viewpoint from reporter Dana DiFilippo. She most recently covered crime and criminal justice issues for the Philadelphia Daily News. Dana, welcome to NewsWorks tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Transparency as a large issue, where would you assess the department in terms of where it was and where it still needs to go?
Generally, not great. There's a number of recent controversial police-involved shootings that have kind of forced the police department's hand on that, most notably the case of Brandon Tate Brown. He was shot in the lower northeast in December during a routine car stop, and months of protests by his family and supporters resulted in some of changes in the police department and how they release information regarding police-involved shootings. They put a heck of a lot more information online now than they used to. However, they don't routinely give out things to reporters who call them on the phone. There's a big suspicion amongst the police officers in terms of what the media's motives might be.
How is morale in the department that Richard Ross is inheriting?
People generally liked Commissioner Ramsey, but I don't know so much that that's true of the rank and file. He has become known as somebody who it cracks down on corruption in the ranks. A lot of the rank and file feel that that's not done fairly. Some of them feel that it's done along racial lines. Some of them feel that if you're a white shirt, you get away with more than the blue shirts do. We at the Daily News hadn't found any really real consensus on or evidence of either of those things. I mean, but in terms of arresting police officers, disciplining police officers that have been accused of everything from driving while drunk to domestic violence to shaking down drug dealers, he has tried to act decisively and deal with those problems as they've come up.
In the capacity of your work, is it your personal assessment that the city feels safer than it did 8 years ago? And is that the consensus among community members when you get out and about?
I think that depends on the neighborhood. In the wealthier neighborhoods, in the more central neighborhoods, Center City, for example, I think people might say, sure, they feel slightly safer.
And that's not just when the Pope comes to town.
Right. The Pope is a good example where they see this big police presence, and that just the visibility of police officers in some neighborhoods can make people feel more safe. However, in the more of the high crime neighborhoods where there already traditionally was a feeling of distrust of the police officers, I don't think they feel any more safe. In fact, there's still a feeling that I can't hang out on the street corner in North Philly because the cop's going to come along and hassle me. Why don't you hassle people hanging out on the Chestnut Hill street corners? So I think that distrust of police in a lot of the poorer neighborhoods is so ingrained, and Ramsey, as much as he's done, hasn't been able to solve that deeply rooted problem, that I don't think that they necessarily feel any more secure. And again, we still have 900 shootings so far this year, and so when you're hearing people on a daily basis, several times a day, getting shot on your block or in your neighborhood, that doesn't help either.
Dana, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Reporter Dana DiFilippo. She covers crime and criminal justice issues for the Philadelphia Daily News. Taking a look at this evening's headlines, the Pennsylvania Ethics Commission has fined two former state lawmakers from Philadelphia who previously pleaded guilty after an undercover sting operation. The panel said today it fined former Representative Ronald Waters $10,000 and former Representative Michelle Brownlee $2,500 for ethical violations. In June, Waters pleaded guilty to 9 counts of conflict of interest. Brownlee pleaded guilty to 1 count, stemming from allegations that they accepted cash from an undercover informant posing as a lobbyist. Another Delaware judge announces his retirement, giving Governor Jack Markell yet another judicial appointment opportunity. Vice Chancellor John Noble informed Markell this week that he will retire effective February 26th after serving 15 years on the bench. Noble's retirement is the latest in a series of court shuffles in the past few years in Chancery Court, Superior Court, Family Court, and the Supreme Court. In the past 2 years, four of the five Supreme Court justices have been replaced, and Noble is the second Chancery Court judge in 5 months to announce his retirement. One dozen New Jersey medical groups are appealing the state's approval of a new alliance formed by the state's largest health insurer. The groups filed their appeal against the Department of Banking and Insurance today. The hospital group says the department approved Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield's Omnia Health Alliance without holding public hearings, among other objections. It also says the larger alliance will draw away patients because it can offer a lower cost option. Rain falling, 60 degrees at 6:16. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Showers this evening, and then gradual clearing overnight, falling back to 48 degrees, giving way to a sunny Friday, breezy, tomorrow's high 56, partly sunny Saturday, up to 53 degrees. Still ahead, in the wake of last week's attacks in Paris, a Philadelphia-area transplant prepares to perform with his indie band there tomorrow night.
We know that people want to come out and see music and sort of assert their right to do so, but I also think underneath it all, there is this uneasiness.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Cabrini College is proud to support WHYY, now offering part-time doctoral degrees in organizational development and educational leadership. Cabrini can help you earn a PhD or EdD in 3 years without giving up your life. Their faculty and small classes help to expand your knowledge and professional network while giving you the tools to advance your career. More information on Cabrini's professional doctoral programs is available at cabrini.edu/doc.
You know the deal, right? Digital killed the music industry? Yeah, not so.
You know, the way we're projecting out right now, music is bigger than it's ever been before.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, music manager, venture capitalist, and CEO Troy Carter. Next time on Marketplace from APM.
Coming up next on WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Allentown, Pennsylvania has the largest per capita Syrian population in the United States. Over a week ago, we focused on Syrian refugees coming to Allentown to make a new life. Following terrorist attacks in Paris last Friday in the Middle East, many local political leaders voted today in the U.S. House to suspend resettlement in the United States. WHYY's Laura Benshoff went back to the Lehigh Valley to see whether the locals agree.
Syrians have been coming to Allentown for over 100 years, and for much of that time, their landing pad has been a neighborhood called the Sixth Ward.
I lived two blocks away. This is Second. I lived on Front.
Rawan Jarouche moved to the Sixth Ward in 1962, following a path carved out by his Syrian grandparents.
And predominantly, the people here are pretty much still Syrian or Arabs.
After spending a lifetime working for Bethlehem Steel, he now volunteers with a local Syrian-American community organization. Jarouche says even though he lobbied for Allentown to accept Syrian refugees, he empathizes with politicians who've grown anxious over welcoming more.
Yesterday I was asked, what do you think? Why is Governor Chris Christie so upset? I mean, I remember September 11. I understand his anxiety, but I still will say proceed with caution.
Jarouche's family and much of the old families are from the Christian minority and support leader Bashar al-Assad, while some of the people arriving now have fled violence under his regime. Father Anthony Sabah is the leader of the local Syrian Orthodox Church, St. George's. He says he thinks the conflict in Syria and Assad have been mischaracterized.
It is not what we are being told by the media. He's a dictator. He is not a dictator.
But he says he supports the people coming now, some of whom say they fled Assad's government. One recent refugee, who asked not to be named, says he left his hometown of Homs for Damascus in 2012.
In Homs, there were peaceful protests and demonstrations, and the regime wasn't liking that.
Before long, Damascus too became unsafe.
Anybody from Homs would be arrested or their houses would be raided if they found out they were from Homs, even if there was no reason.
He says he doesn't understand why politicians in the United States are afraid of refugees who are escaping terror.
There are no reasons for anybody to be afraid of refugees. Refugees are here for their children and their families so that they can move on.
Whether stories like his are politically persuasive isn't clear. The vetting process for refugees takes an average of 2 years, but since the Paris attacks, some local politicians, including Pennsylvania Senator Pat Toomey, say it needs to get even tougher.
We have to re-examine the security protocols we use for admitting Syrian refugees, and until we have done that, we should suspend the program. There is no reliable way of vetting those who come from these chaotic terrorist havens.
One of the Paris attackers may have posed as a refugee to enter France. Toomey says he doesn't have any concrete suggestions on how to fix the process, which remains murky to a lot of people. Lehigh Valley Congressman Charlie Dent was among the votes for holding off accepting more refugees while background checks are strengthened. Todd Long waits under the Christmas lights outside the Lehigh Valley Mall for his wife and young son to finish shopping. He says he doesn't know much about the background checks, but he's still leaning towards not welcoming refugees.
If we would find out tomorrow that, you know, 1,000 Syrian refugees were coming into the Lehigh Valley next week, then people are going to think, well, what if one of them was an ISIS terrorist who got through the cracks?
Sierra Pepper, a mall employee, disagrees.
I don't really have a problem with it. They need a home. It's that simple.
Since 2012, Allentown has accepted 138 Syrian refugees, and more could come next year. While some politicians are trying to stem the flow, Allentown Mayor Ed Pawlowski says he thinks the vetting process is strong and welcoming refugees is in line with American values. I'm Laura Benshoff, WHYY News.
Tomorrow night, the band Panama is scheduled to perform in Paris, just blocks from the club where dozens were gunned down in attacks last Friday. Graham Richmond fronts the band. He lives in Paris now, but originally hails from Pittstown, New Jersey area. Graham, thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Graham, before we talk about tomorrow's performance, where were you last Friday?
Fortunately, I was at home. My wife and I were at home, and started to, you know, get text messages and hear the news, turned on the TV and followed it, you know, for many, many hours into the evening.
I imagine the sense of shock Friday evening and Saturday, but now 1 week on, paint a picture of the tenor of the town.
It's been pretty destabilizing in the sense that everyone was kind of reeling from the attack, the attacks themselves Friday night and into the weekend, but things sort of continued on. I mean, they discovered one of the vehicles that the terrorists used a few blocks from my home, actually, in Paris on, I think it was Monday morning. So they cordoned off the whole neighborhood. And then yesterday, things continued just north of where we live in Saint-Denis, a suburb. So it's sort of strange in that it's almost like an earthquake with a series of aftershocks, in that things continue to kind of happen. And maybe things are going to start to settle, you know, into a more normal pattern. But it's been pretty on edge here for the last several days.
Was it music that originally brought you and your wife to Paris in 2002?
Not at all. Actually, my wife and I met at Swarthmore College, just outside of Philadelphia, but she had come to America from Paris to go to school there. And after several years of living in Philly after college, she kind of got the itch to come back, and I was game. And it was you know, just sort of more of an adventure than anything else. And here we are many years later, still here and really enjoying it.
Tell us about this venue called, is it L'Espace B?
L'Espace B. It's a really terrific venue. I think for people in your, you know, in the Philadelphia area, I would compare it to the Boot and Saddle or Johnny Brenda's, kind of a, you know, small but great schedule of bands coming through. It's actually the place that a lot of rising star type indie bands in the U.S. Will play on their first visit to Paris.
In internal conversations among band members after Friday's events, was there any trepidation about performing so soon, or perhaps paradoxically an even stronger urge to go out and do it?
You know, I think the conversations we had were all about the need to kind of do our part and play a concert, precisely because people, you know, need to get back out there. You know, I will say that's the strangest thing about this concert that we're going to be, you know, playing, is that it's kind of On the one hand, we know that people want to come out and see music and sort of assert their right to do so. And I also expect, you know, people might have an extra glass of wine or something. You know, it's going to be a festive environment. But I also think underneath it all, there is this uneasiness. And, you know, even talking to the bass player today, you know, we both kind of admitted that, there's tension, and there's also this expectation, like, we need to be sort of to symbolize everyone's right to come back out and go to a concert or something. And so, A, we better put on a good show, but B, we need to kind of push aside any, you know, fears that we have so that we can be strong for everyone that's coming back out. And, you know, I guess in theory, taking a risk by heading out to a concert or something, which, you know, seems absurd to say now, but, you know, given the events of last week, it's kind of the reality, I guess, that we're in now.
How long has the band been together?
The band in its current form in Paris has been together since, I would say, maybe 2005. And Panama played in Philadelphia before I moved here from like 99 to 2002.
Was it easy to come up with the rather autobiographical song Paris, France?
You know, I wrote that after being here for a couple of years. I think I needed to have some perspective. You know, that song speaks about sort of the differences between my life in Philadelphia and my life in Paris. And so it took a little while. And I will say that, you know, when I was in Philadelphia, I wrote lots and lots of songs about Philadelphia because I really enjoyed living there. And in Paris, it took a little longer to kind of get my sea legs. But I've written, there's actually a song on the last record we put out that's called Saint-Denis. That's about, you know, really about the church there, great Gothic church, really arguably the first Gothic church. And so I have begun to integrate, Parisian life into the songs.
Graham, thanks so much for offering perspective. Good luck tomorrow night. And we'll say goodbye and then let listeners hear excerpts from Paris, France.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave.
That's Graham Richmond with the band Panama performing tomorrow night at
L'Espace B
in Paris. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Vinyakov and Kimberly Haas. Philadelphia's transgender people have at times had a tense relationship with police, but some officers are reaching out to the community. More on that story on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Widener University supports WHYY. Widener offers over 60 undergraduate majors and concentrations, including communication studies, computer science, business administration, and more. Widener is hosting a Widener Day open house on Saturday, November 21st at 9 a.m. It's an opportunity to explore campus life with a guided tour, meet with professors, and chat with current students. That's Saturday, November 21st at 9 a.m. Registration available now at widener.edu/openhouse. Widener Leadership Works.